From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Seed keeper, seed educator, seed curator, and seed farmer Rowan White calls seeds her living, breathing relatives that want to live and grow with the earth just as she does. Rowan says seeds are witnesses to the past and tell stories that might otherwise be lost, stories she has dedicated herself to keeping alive. Rowan White has her roots in the Mohawk Nation on the New York-Canada border, but she has set down deep ones in Northern California, too, where she co-founded the seed farming cooperative called Sierra Seeds that offers a diverse selection of local organic seeds that thrive in the unique Northern California mountain foothills. Rowan, who was elected in 2014 to the board of directors of the prestigious Seed Savers Exchange, is also co-author, along with Brian Connolly, of the handbook Breeding Organic Vegetables, a step-by-step guide for growers. I'm so glad she joins me today as my seed series continues to talk about the varieties she's nurturing and especially her beloved and beautiful collection of corn. Welcome, Rowan, to Away to Garden. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Margaret, for having me.
Oh, good. I am so glad. It's a pleasure. I'm so glad that we finally, after knowing about each other for for a while, been introduced properly.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start with a little bit of kind of personal history, your history with seed. And I kind of, you know, recall a story, and I think it was maybe from something I heard, an interview with you or something, that involved tribal elders who had coffee cans and mason jars of their cultural and agricultural heritage, the seed, you know, in their collections, and they gifted some to you. And I kind of wonder if you could refresh my memory about your history with seed and how did you get involved with it so intimately?
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful place to start. When I was graduated from high school and moved on to college, I was going to a school in Western Massachusetts, and I was working on an organic farm. And first time, you know, my mother always had a garden, but was really getting into understanding where our food came from, and began to pull out all the seed packets at the beginning of the year, and sort of sparked my curiosity about where those seeds came from.
Mm.
And remembering that from my own cultural lineage that we had stories of three sisters and all of our ceremonial cycles being guided by the agricultural cycles, and really realizing that I didn't know much about our agricultural traditions and our seeds and the like. And so it took me on a pathway, which I'm still on, that was 17 years ago, to really find out a little bit more about who I was through our agricultural heritage. And I raised a grant, did an independent study, and went on the road and traveled around New York State and Canada, just kind of tracking down different elders, people who were still farming the old seeds, the heirloom seeds, and just made really lifelong friendships with people, and really felt great privilege and honor that they were sharing their seeds, and not only their seeds, but really I think what was awakened inside of me was that they were sharing their story and their cultural memory about these seeds, mostly, little baby food jars of these old corns, old flour and flint corns, some old beans and squash, and really just saw that, you know, at that point, there weren't a whole lot of us in the younger generation that were asking those kinds of questions about where our food was coming from and what kinds of food that we had grown, 50, 100, 200 years ago.
So you had to get yourself some baby food jars to fill up, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Uh-huh. And it took a whole lot of courage, I think, for me to even plant the seeds in the ground because it was such a great responsibility.
Oh, I know. People who have shared seeds with me, people who have been mentors who I've respected or loved, you know, in various ways, and they've given me a seed, and it's like, uh-oh, you know.
Yeah, now I have to take care of this, I know. And so that ended up becoming a real slippery slope, so to speak, of taking me along these journeys, and I ended up eventually writing my thesis on the very topic of the interface between cultural restoration and genetic, like seed restoration or conservation, mm-hmm. and seeing how the two really play, you know, go hand in hand, mm-hmm. that in order to restore a lot of our cultural traditions, it requires us to be eating our traditional foods again and to be saving those seeds and really honoring that part of who we were. So, that was 15 years ago that I finished that, and I'm actually just picking that manuscript back up and revising and adding to it.
So I know about that.
Get it published, so it's exciting. Yeah.
So now you're out west, and is it Nevada City, California? Is that
correct?
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you're doing the Sierra Seeds Cooperative, and tell us a little bit about sierraseeds.org and what that is.
Yeah. Well, so we relocated right when my first child was born, my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
We relocated out west for work, and when I landed here, immediately I was like, who are the seed people in this area? Who are the seed swappers and the seed savers? And really quickly found out that there wasn't a whole lot of any activity, even though there was a really vibrant food scene. And so a couple of friends that I met that were farmers, we decided to host a seed swap. There used to have been a seed swap in our area, but it had kind of fallen to the wayside, and so we revitalized it and rented out a community space and put some flyers up and brought some seed, and around maybe 30 people showed up, kind of curious about what a seed swap even was, and that was the humble beginnings of the Sierra Seed Cooperative. Many of us who were at that initial seed swap eventually went on to take it into its current incarnation, which is a growers cooperative for mm-hmm. seeds. We have a retail seed company, and we have a growers network of around a dozen farmers and gardeners, many of which who grow for market or grow for their own homestead. We all commit to growing a certain number of seed crops each year, and then we pool them into our common office space and then repack under a retail label and have a online web store and retail racks and local health food stores and nurseries. And, yeah, just trying to get people to understand a little bit more about the importance of seed within our local food system.
So your local food system, again, we said you're in the Northern California foothills, the Sierra foothills, I guess,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So just like what kind of climate and a little picture of kind of your growing season there?
Yeah. So it's actually, I always laugh because I brought all my Mohawk seeds out here and they were like thrilled because it went from a zone 3 to all the way to a zone 7 being out here in Northern California.
Yeah, give me a long season, mommy. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And let me stretch my roots.
Yeah. So we live at around 2,500 feet elevation
mm-hmm.
in the Sierra foothills. So it's nice. It's not as hot as the Sacramento Valley, the Central Valley. We also have a lot. I just think it's more beautiful. It's forest. But it's pretty dry. We have a really distinct wet season, which is about 6 months of the year if we're lucky, and then we have about 6 months of a dry season where we get almost no rain, which
mm-hmm.
for a seed farmer like myself is actually quite nice because we can irrigate and really control the humidity and the moisture so that we can have really great success with growing good high-quality seed. But it also makes us really think long and hard about how we utilize our water resources.
Yes.
And what sorts of regional adaptation we're working on, things like drought resistance and heat tolerance, and really trying to create seeds that are adapted to low-input organic farm
mm-hmm.
and gardens that
right.
are like here in the foothills. So, you know, we do our best. You know, we start from seeds, some of the seeds we've collected that have been grown here in this region for a while. We import seeds from collections like the Native Seed Search Collection comb through, all the various, heirloom and heritage seed catalogs and find ones that do really well. We also do a variety trial program
mm-hmm.
here in our area, so we get local farms to trial out different varieties to see how they hold up in their growing environments, and then that really informs us as a seed growers cooperative of which varieties are worthwhile for us to continue to keep in our catalog and continue to work on
and now
meet the needs.
So people, you know, who order, because again, you said you have a website at sierraseeds.org, and you know, people can order from anywhere, you know, thanks to the internet. And people do from other bioregions order your seed, yes?
And
just like you said, you're bringing in seed from Native Seed Search in Arizona, or you brought with you some of your traditional Mohawk varieties from the Northeast, and, you know, so people are trying things. So it's not just for people literally in a certain number of zip codes to try.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really interesting point, Margaret, which is that I think a huge part of this kind of bioregional seed movement and the organic seed movement has really sort of really used local as a way to promote a little bit more about, you know, what we're doing. But I also think that you know, in our region, for instance, we can grow certain seed crops really well, and we can we also realize that there are places like the Willamette Valley or the Skagit Valley where they can grow other kinds of seed crops that don't grow as well as here, like a lot of the cooler season brassicas and things like that. They do grow much, much better for seed in those regions. And what I'm really realizing as we move forward in this along this path is that really, I think what people are looking for is, you know, is local is important, but I also think it's about decentralization of the seed system.
I think that's a good point, yes.
Yeah, so it's, so I think that what we offer and what many of our kind of friend or sister or brother seed companies like Adaptive Seed or Hudson Valley Seed Library or Uprising Seeds, I think what we all, or Siskiyou Seeds, I think what we all kind of offer is more transparency, you know, that we are saying that here are the faces behind your seed. Here are farmers that you know, that you know that they practice, you know, good family farming and, you know, just do it with good ethics and good
intimate and hands-on and not big ag or big pharma.
I think it's refining in that way. I think that we realize that there we do send seed all over the country and people give us really good feedback on how our seeds are doing in other places. And so I do think that, you know, we try and really cater to a certain bioregion, so
to speak,
but the seeds can go all over. And what I really see is that just as we want diversity in the types of varieties that we have and the seed crops that we have, I think we also need to recognize on a whole that we also need diversity in the ways that we distribute seeds. So our main niche customer, so to speak, would be gardeners mostly, you know, small to mid-range organic farmers, permaculture, homesteaders, micro farms.
Yes.
But then I realized that there are companies like Haimoeng and Johnny's that, that really cater to a very different niche, you know, that cater to maybe mid to large scale organic. And there's kind of room for us all at the table, you know?
I want to, so we've talked a little bit sort of philosophically and about what Sierra Seeds is doing, but I know you've been curating a collection of rare squash and beans and corn, sort of heritage crops for many years, and corn is a particular passion. I want to spend some of our time talking about corn.
So what's
that about? And I want to make sure we get to the Three Sisters, because, of course, now you've had me looking up old antique pictures of the Three Sisters arrangements and whatever, but tell me about the corn.
Yeah, well, the corn was really kind of, when I began going around and collecting the seed, I was just, I never really had a deep connection or really a reverence for corn and for all that corn has given our people as Mohawk people. But as I started to do a little bit more of my background research, I realized that we had like dozens of different corns that had been traditionally grown in the Northeast for all different kinds of reasons, and began gathering them, some that had common origins but then had split off into different families stewarding them, and different families having different aesthetics. So maybe it was a multicolored corn and they would select more for the pink kernels and less of the blue. Or, you know, so you see how you know, just in a few generations, you know, that we can really change the genetics of a corn. And
yes, and the roads diverge.
Yeah, and the amazing thing about corn, which I found when I was collecting all these things, is that corn really is a co-creation between plants and humans, you know, that corn doesn't really exist in its modern form in the wild, that it really was this sort of interesting intersection between plants and humans, and really seeing how quickly corn adapts to, from all the way to the tip of South America, all the way up to where we are in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And so the corns that I have primarily in my collection are a Northeast Flower and Flint. They're eight rows, typically. It's eight rows if you count them around.
Right.
And they have, you know, extremely short maturation time, you know, in the 80 to 100 days. So they mature really quickly. They're really productive, kind of short and squat, and just really nutritious. And, so that was kind of my initial love affair with corn, was just seeing mm-hmm. all the different shades and shapes and colors, and how, you know, in many of our traditional foods, it was the featured ingredient, and also in our creation myth, as Haudenosaunee or Iroquois, corn figures very prominently in our creation myth and in our creation story, and so it really shows the very cultural importance of corn, and that it really was our sustenance. Along with the beans and squash.
So you said flint corn. So just quickly tell me flint corn, because, you know, there's sweet corn and dent corn and popcorn, and some people say calico corn, and, you know, there's all these words about corn, but what's flint corn?
Yeah, so flint corn is, a type of corn that has a much harder seed coat,
mm-hmm.
and so it's kind of like the corn that when you would grind, you'd make grits or polenta.
Yes.
And then flour corn just has just a much bigger starchy endosperm in the middle, and so it's easier to grind.
Okay, mm-hmm. good, because I see some of it in the catalog at sierraseeds.org, so I just wanted to make sure I understood.
Yeah.
So, like I said, you know, I'm going to ask you about the three sisters, because some of them, I think it might have been on your blog, actually, maybe there's an old picture of a three sisters arrangement, and it actually contained five plants, not just three.
Yeah,
so I'm completely lost now. So you have to help me through this.
I always like to honor the other two sisters. I think they kind of get not as much publicity. But, you know, in doing some of my research, I realized that, you know, that Mohawk people and, you know, indigenous peoples all over the Americas were practicing some, you know, a lot of polyculture, and were growing, you know, the corn as the central trellis, and the beans that wrap around, and then the squash that grows along the bottom. But two other really culturally significant plants that our people grew was a type of tobacco, which was Nicotiana rustica.
It's wonderful, yes.
So that's just beautiful. It's an insectary. The bees are, you know, love that plant. And
hummingbirds
also,
probably like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, hummingbirds.
You have any,
carpenter bees.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of pollinators. And it also, traditionally, very many indigenous peoples would use tobacco water, actually, as like something to soak your seeds into, so that would eliminate issues of rot in the ground.
Oh, so nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
it was in one of the original sort of, what would that be? Is it antifungal, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Antiseptic,
exactly.
Maybe an antifungal, I don't mm-hmm. know, but one or the other, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other forgotten sister is the sunflower. The sunflower is a very significant plant in our traditional diets, because it provided that essential fat. You know, the seeds being really deeply fatty and nourishing, and also provided a trellis for beans as well. Especially some of the beans in my collection, I would call a cornfield bean, which are they're kind of like a half runner. They're not a really vigorous
mm-hmm.
pole bean, but they kind of, and, you know, they have tendrils, but they're not super vigorous, so they wouldn't just completely take the corn down. And then there are some beans in my collection that are very vigorous, and they hold up much better around a sunflower.
I see. So you make really important partnerships that you learn about, and you watch and see who lives best together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now,
exactly.
The squash, one of the great attributes of the squash around the base of this whole thing is that it has some spininess a little bit to it, and mm-hmm. it can sometimes deter some hungry animals from eating
like
the corn.
Yeah, like the raccoons.
Those naughty raccoons. Now, in some of the pictures I saw, some of the old style pictures, I saw like a mound that the corn was planted on. Is that, is that the traditional thing? You make them, it's a hill kind of like it's like
yeah,
a.
Yeah, you make mounds. And
okay,
then
like you might do pumpkins. Or squash on a hill or mound.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see. Oh, great. Okay, because see now I didn't get it. I didn't get it until I saw that on your website.
I know. And when I was in, actually back in the days when I was sort of on my curious seed trail in college, I actually did an experiment, actual replicated scientific experiment about the difference between monoculture and polyculture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set up replicated plots of three sisters and then the monoculture equivalents of each one.
Oh,
and then calculated the yields and what they call, it's like a scientific term, but land equivalent ratio. So it's understanding, you know, you may have to plant things at greater spacing when you do three sisters gardening, but when you stack, like your stacking functions, you're utilizing vertical space, then you actually get higher yield per square foot than in monoculture.
Aha.
I proved my hypothesis. So.
Good girl. So we only have like 2 minutes left. I mean, there's
great.
So much to talk about, but maybe shout out a couple of things in the sierraseeds.org 2015 list that we should be on the lookout for that aren't what we've talked about. I mean, I saw an interesting Asian green Aztec spinach. It's kind of red, and maybe it's an amaranth
relative.
Yeah,
that's a great one. We grew that one. Its name is actually Huazontle.
Yes.
The red Aztec spinach is from Mexico, and it's an incredible insectary. It's also a really nutrient-dense green eaten at many stages. I'm also adding in several more of my collection, my Haudenosaunee collection, making that available. My one thing that I'm actually just about to list on the catalog today is a skunk. It's called a skunk bean. Mm-hmm, and it's beautiful. It looks like a starry night. It's black and white speckled,
beautiful.
It's a really vigorous pole, and it's a real success story because I was handed just a dozen seeds in my hand, and now I have a 5-gallon bucket,
and it was on
the brink of extinction. So, and now I see it in multiple seed catalogs, and so it's really that story of how do we restore some of these old varieties and make them relevant to today.
Well, so. And that's a perfect bottom line for our discussion, to really perpetuate and let these stories be told forever and ever and ever, and let more seeds be made from just the few seeds that were left, which is great. And I'm so glad to speak to you, and thank you for sharing this. And of course, I'll have more information on the website along with the transcript of the show. And I'll speak to you again soon.
Wonderful. Thanks
yes.
so much, Margaret.
You're welcome.
All right.
We've been talking with SierraSeeds.org's Rowan White, and I will speak with all of you next week. Don't miss an episode. Be sure to subscribe free to the podcast on Stitcher or iTunes. And don't forget, you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. Happy seed shopping. See you next week.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.